Hey, security peeps, we are live with another edition of Breaking Into Cybersecurity. It is CISO Thursdays, and the whole fam is here today. Finally, we're all back. I'm Renee Small, cybersecurity super recruiter, helping awesome leaders hire great talent. I am here with all of my fabulous folks. I am so excited that everyone is back. James Azar, introduce yourself, sir.
Hey everyone, James Hayes, our CISO and host of the Cyber Hub and CISO Talk podcast.
Wonderful. Chris Folon.
Co-host, cybersecurity consultant, career coach, and all around good guy.
Awesome. All around awesomeness.
This is now a Tinder profile.
Naomi Buckwalter.
Hey everyone, Naomi Buckwalter, also member, oh my gosh, mentor and coach. My Tinder profile is not that great. I'm crushing this. And I love being here. I love helping you break into cybersecurity. So ask away all your questions.
So good. So good. So we got some people here. Good morning, everyone. This is Jimmy. Hi, Jimmy. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. We love seeing people from YouTube. Serenia is here. Hi, Serenia. We have so many topics to get into today. Which ones do you guys want to start off with first?
Let's start off with your book. You guys finished your book and published it. Congratulations.
Yes, we did. Chris, Gary, and I, we have had, almost a year?
Yeah,
of pulling this all together. And for me, I started interviewing people before this. So it feels like it's almost even longer in terms of the amount of time it took. But it's such a great experience because we each brought a different perspective. That's why I think this book is so, so cool. So, you know, me coming from the recruiter side, Chris coming from a practitioner and professor side, and then Gary coming from the CISO side, you know, as to how to help all different types of people break into the industry. So I'm excited about it. We already hit number one on job hunting, I think.
On the first day it was number one. We're down to number 35 right now, but still doing good. Considering that there's tens of thousands in there. But the origin story of this was that after 2 years of doing breaking into cybersecurity, I thought what if we could summarize all the different tips and tricks that we've come up with over the years, and I started writing it down. I'm like, Renee, do you want to tag in here? And then I knew Gary also had a publishing company, so I thought, why not reach out to Gary? Because I know he publishes all sorts of career advice and stuff on his different mediums. And he's like, that would be amazing because he has a host of different articles that he's written throughout the years that he could craft into this message. And it's been literally a year of going back and forth and finding the best way to summarize and condense all this information for everyone.
Yep. So there's a link. I don't think it's I'm going to put it in LinkedIn to Chris, if you can. So, yes. It's been a labor of love. Like Chris said, he had his stuff. I had interviews going to piggyback off the first book that I did, which was Magnetic Hiring. So really looking at it from Magnetic Hiring was a peer-to-peer, me helping other recruiters recruit cyber talent. And then what I learned from doing that, along with what Gary had and what Chris had, I thought was pretty cool. So it's exciting. It's very exciting to be out there. So we can't wait to hear what people think about it. And it should be a relatively easy read. I thought I read through it pretty quickly the first time or two.
Well, that's because you wrote it.
I say so myself. I do say so myself. So yeah, we need the security peeps to check it out. And I'm thinking that we will eventually we'll do some conversations just around some of the topics, some of the things that we talked about. But it's literally a lot of the stuff that we say here on CISO Thursdays and some of these other conversations that we've had over the past couple, almost 3 years, talking to people about breaking into the industry.
Absolutely. And I think it's just a way of getting it out past our audience, and people can share with their network, their peers, and just spread the message.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to get a signed copy of your book. I just want to be clear about
it. Yeah, when's the book signing? I'm going
to make it to my bookshelf. So I'm ordering a few from Amazon, and Renee and Chris, I need you know, your John Hancock's on those books, please. They could be worth a lot of money one day. You never know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You'll just have to come back up to the DC area and actually meet us instead of just hanging out with all your other special people. You know,
it's not my fault last time you two were busy when I came up, right?
I should have put a moving box in your hand.
You should have. Yeah, that would have been that.
So I'm trying to see who wrote magnetic firing, because that's pretty funny.
That's funny.
Somebody wrote, I'm going to write magnetic firing. Nathan Greenspan, I'm going to write magnetic firing. That's hilarious. That is hilarious.
I think that's because Nathan's been fired so many times. He's like an expert at it. Like, he knows when he gets the phone call or email that says, hey, Nate, we need to talk. You know, like, if you've ever seen like the NFL, like when they do like the, when they used to do, what was it called? The show on HBO where they'd follow the football team during training camp. And they'd go to like people who walk on or free agents, and it'd be like, coach wants to see you. And he says, bring the playbook. Yeah. Like, that's the most dreaded thing. Like, you're about to go get fired, right? That's why they tell you bring the playbook.
It's so funny. Well, I want to know. So last night I did this, before we get into the rest of the topics, I did once a month, as you all probably know, breaking into cybersecurity, we partner up with Federal Career Connections, and the folks on there have a long history of being in the federal government. And because it's not Chris and I's expertise, we bring them on so they can talk about government related stuff. And so we had Chris Westbrook on, who's amazing. And she had been in the CIA for over 30 years, hiring over 1,000 people. And focus on the intelligence community. So I wanted to plug her real quick and let everyone know, check out federalcareerconnection.org if you're looking to understand how to kind of tricks and tips for getting into the federal government. Because she dropped some jewels last night. It's posted on our, you know, on my feed and on YouTube and everything else, but she's actually hosting a free workshop. So check that out. The federal government is more open to folks that don't have experience than, you know, more they just have much more opportunities. And she also shared that 80% of the or 70 something percent of those opportunities are outside of the DC metro area. So I know we get viewers from all over the country. And so she shared that yesterday, which I thought was awesome information. So if everyone wants to kind of chime in and say where they are, that would be cool too. We want to know, definitely want to see where people are viewing from, and definitely connect with Chris Westbrook and check out federalcareerconnection.org. So that is that. So I'm going to shout some people out, and then we'll get into topic number two, which is Naomi's stuff. We've been a busy little group here. So Jerry Dorch says good morning or good afternoon, right? I feel like it's morning too. Clarence says good afternoon. Hey, Clarence. Al is here. Sean is saying, how can we begin? Now we can begin. He's arrived, so we can start. Derek Liggins says hi. James is back. Good afternoon, James. Naomi Hill is out here. Let's see. Magnetic firing. That is too much fun. Frankie Ortiz. Good afternoon, Frankie. Brendan is saying hard knocks. So somebody says, yay, it's CISO Thursday. James wants to know, when is James? James McQuiggan says, when is James Azar coming out with his book? What's up with that, man?
Working on it. It is a work in progress, but like when you're authoring a book, it's it's very different. Like, I feel so much, I feel natural, like writing, like doing a podcast. I feel completely unnatural on pen and paper.
Well, you know what? Chris gave me a good tip. He said, I was dealing with that too. It was like pulling teeth a little bit with getting some of the stuff out of my head and on paper. And they were beating me up because I was kind of dragging. I was the caboose. Everybody else had their work in. And I was like, I don't have my chapters in. So Chris gave me a good piece of advice. And he said to speak it. So speak into, you know, like you're doing a podcast, like speak your chapters, like you're talking to us, and then transcribe. So I'm with you, James. I understand.
No, so I've done that.
I'm worried to have.
Is it my connection that's bad now?
I don't know if it's mine.
I just want to point something out that this has been happening forever. Yesterday, the same thing happened on the town square last night. We had every 15 minutes, like our feed would do something similar. I think is a StreamYard bandwidth issue.
StreamYard must have so many people on now that
everyone has a podcast. A LinkedIn YouTube issue because of the amount of people that live stream on YouTube and LinkedIn.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, we were talking about that LinkedIn issue last week. How you know, so many people are now on LinkedIn, or a couple of weeks ago, not last week. So Jane says, yes, we're going to get a book signing going. Sean is ordering it. Thank you so much. Yay, it's Cecil Thursday. Who said that? Yay, it's Cecil Thursday. Oh my God, so many people. Oh, Chris Van Gorder says the Cecil Thursday. So that's awesome. All right, folks. So we're going to get into Naomi. Then I'll shout more people out after that. So Naomi, tell us about your new venture.
Oh my gosh. Thank you everyone for volunteering. I got over 600 responses, 600 volunteers. Now I don't know what to do with any of you guys. I need some major help because my original thought was just to create some static HTML pages and telling people why it's important and how easy it is to hire new people, entry-level folks with 0 years of experience and zero CISSPs. And it's possible because I've done it, James has done it, everyone has done it. So please come and volunteer, but I do need help. I need board members, I need website designers, I need people who are great at communicating and reaching out to hiring managers and talking to them. So I'm going to be...
You know what we should do on your website? And I'm throwing out an idea here, and maybe we'll create a group project out of it. Job descriptions, uniform job descriptions, yes, for entry-level roles.
Now that I have 600 volunteers, I'm like, how can I tap into the talents of everybody? So by the way, this nonprofit venture of mine, Cybersecurity Gatebreakers Foundation, go to cybersecuritygatebreakers.org. The idea is to change the mindset in the hiring managers because the skills gap is a myth. I believe there's a demand gap that exists in the minds of hiring managers because we don't understand that it doesn't take 5 years of experience to do an entry-level job. It just takes the right fit and the right intellect and the right motivation. So let's see how we can close the gap in cybersecurity because I don't think there's a skills gap.
Naomi, you don't think that an entry-level SOC analyst requires a CISP?
Yeah, can you believe it? I just don't.
Naomi, it's an underscore requirement that you should have a CISP to be a SOC analyst.
Naomi, I actually have an idea for you.
Yeah.
I was reached out to by a gentleman named James Gopel, and he does a lot of work with the CMMC, but one of his ideas was to introduce standard job descriptions through like a government initiative like CMMC, where they make that a requirement of the contracting and use that mechanism vehicle as a way to help standardize the approach across the industry.
That would be amazing. And that's kind of what I was hoping for, but I was just trying to start small. But now that I have 600 volunteers, how can I best use them? And most of the folks are trying to break into cybersecurity. Put this on your resume. This is exactly what we're talking about when we say volunteer or join open source groups. This is it. Like, spend an hour or two a week, pitch in however you can, and you can put it on your resume, like, I helped with this project or whatever, and then show your contributions. That's what we like to see as hiring managers. That's all.
Excellent. That's all. That's just it. This little project I've been working on. Well, we are beyond excited. I'm over the moon excited for this project, because as you know, the reason why we're all here is for the same reason, mm-hmm. right? Getting more people into the industry. So kudos. We've been waiting patiently for it to be official. So super excited about that. I think you're going to get a bunch more volunteers chiming in. I also have to connect you with a person too, who's working on these puzzles. And his project is working on using, instead of having like the whole interviewing as a part of the interviewing process, having puzzles as a part of that information versus people who don't, you know, for the people who don't have experience. It's like you go through these kind of assessment puzzle module thingies. And it sounds like an amazing opportunity, and I see tons of synergies. So
synergy.
For sure, for sure.
Thank you all for your support. I'm excited. Let's go.
Yes. So Naomi, what, I guess we'll put the link up here.
Oh yeah. Cybersecuritygatebreakers.org.
Jonathan said, I'm on board. Where do I sign up to volunteer? There you go.
Just go to the website. There's also a LinkedIn page. It doesn't have too much other than the Google form to sign up. But yeah, 600 volunteers. I was actually blown away. I didn't think that all these people would care. And I know that we all care about winning the fight against cybercrime and closing the gap. But I think there's no skills gap. I think there's plenty of people who have the intellect and the ability to excel in our industry, but they just don't get the chance because hiring managers in their minds have this thing that says, hey, we need all these expertise people with all these years of experience before they can even get in. So let's change that mindset. And that's how I think we're gonna do it. Talking too fast.
Exactly. Who's saying they can ambush? Nathan Greenspan says, I can ambush hiring managers in their driveways to let them know about your project.
That's good, Nathan. Okay, I would love that.
I'm on board. Jonathan Webb says, Nathan Katzenstein signed up to mentor. He can't wait to start. So Zoe can help with the website. She knows how to code.
Oh, yes, please.
I signed up to volunteer yesterday. Joshua Alvaretto. Who's excited about an hour with Naomi? Oh, Chris Van Gorder is excited about this. People can ghostwrite for you. There's a lot going on here. We have some help.
I just want to say that if Nathan Greenspan volunteers to go to HR people's driveways, I think we get results much, much quicker.
Very fast.
If you have not seen Nathan,
yep.
Nathan has a very thick beard and a very strong Russian accent, right? So that is just the ultimate formula to get people to bow down and just go, all right, what do you want us to do? Post this job description.
Or
this
else.
Job description, not the other one. This one.
Oh my God.
Get it together, people. We are coming. I love the group, the group dynamic. We're going to have Naomi's 600 person army showing up at doors. I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay. So what's next? Are we doing
bikinis.
The keys.
In the game, can we just real quickly address the EC Council thing, and then we'll move on to the other two things? Because I think it's very imperative. To last week we talked a little bit about EC Council, a little bit. I think we spent half of the show talking about EC Council, a little bit more than that. But they did release another statement. They took some form of responsibility, and I mean some. I felt like it was a bit insincere, but that's just me. It felt like they hired a PR crisis company that came in and wrote that for them, because it had the PR lingo. So mm-hmm. I will just say that, you know, I know a lot of us have taken our EC Council stuff. We have now removed it from, I've removed it until we see real applicable change that doesn't come from an HR company. And I just wanted to crystal, because I've had people asking me, like, what are you doing with EC Council? What do you think of the last statement? I've been hit up a bunch of times. So I've kind of said that we until we see meaningful change from EC Council, and to me that's leadership change. I think the whole leadership needs to go. The fish always stinks from the head. So it starts with Jay, and Jay needs to step down, and then we can have a discussion.
Mm-hmm. Someone did end up stepping down, though. Wasn't it the marketing, head of marketing?
Yeah, but that's blaming your intern.
Mm.
Right? That's blaming your intern. Because either your CMO is extremely dishonest and was doing that for years, and this is systematic, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And the CMO hasn't been there for that long, meaning it can't be that systematic. Mm-hmm. But the leadership has been. So,
yeah, and also don't say something like "I take full responsibility" and then have someone else resign. Like, if you take full responsibility, shouldn't you be the one resigning?
Nah. I'm not trying to cancel him, and I just want to be crystal clear: this isn't a cancel culture thing, but this is more of an accountability. If you're, you know, the other thing I absolutely loved, and we had a real fun thing on Clubhouse on was two things. One, their slogan on LinkedIn says, "Hackers are here and so are we." And I'm like, well, if you guys were part of the community, you'd know to never say hackers are here. You'd say threat actors, right. adversaries, cyber criminals.
Criminals.
Because hackers are here and you're producing them with your certified ethical hacker certification. So, you know, obviously we have a communication issue. But the other part of it is, there has to be accountability, and I think they're trying to ride out the storm, and I don't think we can let this. I'm going to start an EC Council watch on my podcast every single day.
Wow.
And it's going to be how long has it been since Jay hasn't resigned until he steps down?
Oh God.
Oh boy.
Days since last EC Council incident. Zero.
Yeah. Days since. Yeah. Kind of like accidents, right? Days since your last cybersecurity incident. Can you imagine if CISOs had that on the board? It wouldn't be days, it'd be hours since your last cybersecurity.
Oh my God.
Yeah, we went 3 hours without one. We went three hours without it.
So cringe.
Nathan Katzenstein said, "Nowadays, taking full accountability has no consequences."
Yeah.
I mean, you're right about that being all PR. Like, by this time, they probably have a PR firm on retainer. Like, oh, we had another incident. Can you just, like, this is just a shameful at this point. EC Council, like, get better, man. Do better, because you're making us all look bad. If we're all on the same team, and we are, we're trying to make you better here. It's one of those, like, is there a good analogy in the Army? Like, if one person falls, you know, like, bring them back. Like,
you leave no man behind.
No man behind, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So if you are falling behind on the battlefields, EC Council, we're here to pick you back up. Like look to us as an example of like how to do it right. Like, not just us on this panel here, but look to any other great org like ISACA does it really well. They're not in it for the money. And we can tell EC Council, pretty much you're in it for the money at this point. Like, we can tell. You can do better.
I don't mind that they're in it for the money. I'm a capitalist. If you want to do that, that's fine. By all means, go for it. I don't give a shit. But at least do it realistically, meaning don't be unethical in your pursuit of capital, right?
Right.
And if you're going to have ethical in most of your certifications, right, if the word ethical is in the main part of everything you do, then behave the way you are or don't do it at all.
Right. James O'Quigan says, "Number of days since last cyber incident needs to be in every office. Help drive a better culture."
Yeah, the only problem is it's not days. Like, it would be
it would
beat people down. They'd be like, "We were on one day yesterday. How are we on zero again?" Right?
Minutes. This is a comment from before. Ben says, "We're calling because your car warranty is about to expire. Scratch that out. Hiring practices are the spam calls coming from Naomi's army."
It's just Nathan standing at your driveway.
Oh my God. Ugh, they are like the Papa John's pizza of cyber.
Whoa, we're throwing Papa John's. We're subtweeting Papa John's now.
I actually like Papa John's.
I like Papa John's. They're fulfilling.
Okay. But I mean, but with EC Council, it's more like, you know, fool us once, shame on you, fool us twice, shame on us. Except what time are we on now? What number chance have we given you? It's like, it's beyond 25. Shameful at this point. It's shame on all of us for letting you get past this point and to get this far with this.
Yep.
EC Council, do better.
Do better. Bikini Gate. Here we go.
Let's talk about bikinis.
OMG. How does this even happen?
So it started with a lady in CyberSec posting a picture of her in a swimsuit, and someone trolled her. And then everyone in support of her started posting pictures of them in bikinis, including myself. I wasn't in a bikini, but other allies posted pictures of them outside in swimsuits. Don't lie.
Do you want to explain why the person was trolling in the first place?
Well, they were trolling because they said that it was unprofessional to show a picture of them in quote unquote underwear, but it was a swimsuit. First of all, second of all, I don't see what's wrong with, if you look good and you want to share how you look or how you feel with the world, it's your personal profile. Like, people have no right to monitor and share like what you want to share on your own feed. If you don't like it, keep on scrolling by, which is essentially the summary. But it became a trending topic on Twitter, and even Vice wrote about it in their tech section, highlighting how much women get harassed for their looks and everything like that. So, yeah. And James, you look like you had something to add.
Did it become a calendar, though?
I am.
It
did. There's
the calendar component.
That got deleted.
Someone in India decided to take all the pictures and create a calendar and started charging people for it.
Gross.
But it got pulled down off of Twitter really quickly. Mm-hmm. And then there was an idea that someone said that they would create a calendar just for charity and donate all of the proceeds to junior women to go to conferences and things like that. Wow. I don't know if that became a true thing or not, but that's what I know about it.
It's crazy.
Ugh. It went from like terrible. It went from like, hey, it's a bikini pic. Don't post bikini pics because you're an infosec and you say you're only going to tweet about infosec, but you didn't. So that's what the troll says. Like, I only followed you for your infosec content. And then the lady with the bikini is like, how dare you? This is my feed. Like, go away, right? And so everyone in solidarity said, here's my bikini pic. Awesome. We feel really great. And then we felt terrible within the next 12 hours when someone stole the pictures and made a calendar and started charging for them. And then we're back up at the top. Right now it's like a cycle. So now we're at this feeling of like solidarity again, which I kind of like. But why are we constantly doing this to ourselves, people? We're always like bashing each other, bringing each other up, It's exhausting. Jeez.
I just want to point out that you guys just made me go to Twitter. I hate both of you for it. Twitter. And I don't say that lightly because hate is a very strong word. But I feel like I just went down I feel like I'm at the dirtiest, skankiest club on planet Earth, and I'm in the bathroom and it's disgusting.
That is Twitter.
I'm like pissed, yeah. And that's pretty much Twitter. That's what I feel like right now.
So Nathan says, it's still a free country. Hard to believe at times. Mm-hmm. Galen is, I'm still seeing bikini pics today, and it's such an awesome display of solidarity. Hey, Galen. What if you cyber so hard that you need a bikini to check the underwater cables?
Yeah, your underwater data centers.
That
would be hardcore.
Nathan Greenspan. So James McQuiggan says, if you post pictures online, you lose control of them. People will use them for their purposes. Hashtag risk.
Yeah. That it is a downside.
Which I saw.
Time out.
She reposted, or she, you know, I saw the ones this morning where she said, I'm not taking my pictures down. You know, I did post them. They're my personal feed, but, you know, who gives you the right to turn it into a calendar? And I saw some comments like this, you know, pretty much saying like, hey, Twitter, if you put it on Twitter, is public. It's, you know, open. So,
but you still own it. You technically own your own copyright to something, and you could then go after them for that. It's a horrible legal process to do, but
so I kind of want to come at this from a different perspective for just a moment, which is class. Well, we talk about ethics when EC Council, and then we lack it on Twitter, and we kind of like swing by it and assume that it's okay. Well, it's Twitter, and there comes a time for human accountability and class. And if that person, if any person wants to put a picture of them anywhere in a bathing suit, they're fully entitled to do so. That is your God-given right to do it in this country. It's also someone's God-given right to comment on it, right? And say it's unprofessional. And then you know what you do? You block that person and game over. And it moves on. But we tend to sensationalize stuff a little over the top. And we take away focus from the things we should be focused on. It's like we're trying to put out so many fires. We're trying to deal with so many things that not only threaten our organizations and our personal lives, but also can impact our national security and our way of life and our financial future. And at the same time, we're focusing on all these different things because people just don't have personal accountability for the stuff that they do. You're accountable for everything you say. When I say something that is false or bad or is offensive, I take ownership of it like anyone should be, right? But a person is entitled to post whatever pictures they want online. That's their full duty to do so. And if you don't like them, unfollow them. Just like, why is that hard? Like, unfollow the person, or ignore it, or mute their feed for 7 days. I don't know, 500 different ways to go about this. Instead, we're taking focus away from the things we should be talking about that are important for our industry, like helping people get jobs in an economy that is where we're one of the only industries that's actively hiring to give people a decent salary and a decent living. Right? Because all the other places that are hiring at the moment are all, you know, in service industry, right? And there's nothing wrong with the service industry, but a lot of people are looking to transition from the service industry and work in industries like ours. And we're taking away that focus to talk about, you know, Bikini Gate, which to me is a loss of focus. It's a loss of focus of where we need to be, and where we need to be right now is opening doors for each other, helping other people get in. We've got real challenges in every single organization, from giving people an opportunity to break into cyber to helping people cross train into security from, you know, in a mid-career change. I can't tell you how many people have reached out to me that are in the middle of their careers that are, you know, working in ops or HR, and they're looking to transition to security. And they're wonderful leaders. They're great leaders because they've got the soft skills that you want people to have, but they just don't have the technical chops, right? Like, why aren't we talking about that?
Because that's not as sexy and interesting and fun.
But that solves real problems.
No, you're right, James. You're right. I mean, the whole currency of the internet is all about rage. It's like, how much rage can you show off, right? And it's like, more rage equals more followers, and more followers equals more sponsorships. Like, I don't really know how it translates into money. But if you take your attention, it's the attention economy, and you're able to channel that into like, oh, how dare you post something against my bikini pic, right? You start this whole rage thing. People start paying attention. And then you're right, James. We take away the focus from where it matters. We're focusing on the wrong things. Even the fact that we're talking about this makes no sense. I mean, like, it goes against your point. Like, we are trying to focus on the wrong things. So I hear you. It's a really good point.
Like, get rid of sexism. Stop being sexist. Women are entitled to post whatever they want. It doesn't mean anything about them. There's no reflection of it. Get over it. Men, get off your soapbox. Stop acting like little idiots. All right, just move on and do the work you need to do. And everyone in InfoSec, focus on our adversaries, because that's where we need to be focused and not on each other. And let's hold each other accountable, like we're doing with EC Council, right? That is one example of an industry coming together and saying, we're going to hold these people accountable. We're not trying to cancel you, but we want to see structural change in order to trust you.
So what's the difference between holding EC Council accountable versus someone calling out somebody about their bikini online? Like, what's the line?
So one is an organization that prides itself on ethics and is an organization where people go and spend their hard-earned money to get certified to break into security. And what they did is they plagiarized from people who worked very, very hard and took their work without even crediting their work, which wasn't very hard for them to do, right? All they needed to do was, hey, this is an article by Alyssa Miller. We're putting it on our blog because, you know, we really stand behind it. And here's a link to Alyssa's blog. Go see the article there, right? Go see the rest of the post there, whatever. They could have done that, right? And that would have been, that's easy to do, right? Or reach out to Alyssa and say, hey, we'd want to repost it. Would you be interested in posting your blog on our webpage? The difference with the whole bikini thing is that's more of a social constraint issue of just creating outrage because, like you said, Naomi, people want rage. And the problem is we live in a society today where people like feed off of that. And it's like, give me more, give me more, give me more. And we don't need to be there. We need to be focused on, you know, I tell my team, I don't care who you are, where you come from. I don't care about your background. I don't care about your religion, race. I don't care about any of that stuff. I care that you're contributing to the betterment of our team, period, in the discussion. And I feel like that's what we're lacking in securities. We're getting outraged over all these little things, right? And, you know, that person should have been shut down immediately, right? And I think everyone's kind of, that was the answer to BikiniGate, where everyone was posting pictures of them in bikinis, right? To kind of say, well, I'll do that. But all we've done is we've played into the hands of so many people who want to do, to gain AusNet. I mean, speak to anyone who does any open source intelligence right now, and we've given them a ton of information, last vacation, mm-hmm. color of bikini, what your body looks like, any tattoos or remarks that I wouldn't otherwise mm-hmm. know about you. Mm-hmm. Like, we've just given that out. James McQuiggan is absolutely right. There's, you know, in his previous comment talking about this, once you put a picture up, you know, you have no control over it. Well, we just gave open source intelligence to the entire world on practitioners.
On practitioners.
That should know better. Like, we're the people that should know better. Yeah. Right? Like, we're the people that should know better.
We think we're untouchable at some point. Yeah.
No, that's such a good perspective and a valid perspective. Because I think, you know, we take a step back because everyone's human, right? So you're doing your thing, but then you're in a profession and a job where this is what we do. This is where we are. So I think what James says is, so valid. Scott says negativity sells and gets attention. That is what humans do and read.
But that's because we do that. But that's because we do that, right? Like the clickbait, the idea of a clickbait headline, a clickbait anything, and people run to it and we reward this behavior. Like we do it. We reward this behavior and we shouldn't. We shouldn't reward this behavior. Nothing made me happier this week than seeing all the news ratings of all the agencies. I don't know if you've seen it. Like their 25 to 54 like ratings are like the worst they've ever been in history of TV. Like CNN, NBC, Fox, they're all just dying. And I'm like, because alternative media is winning. Joe Rogan has more views than NBC, Fox, CNN, ABC, CBS combined.
Yep.
Let that sink in.
James McQuiggan says, if it bleeds, it leads. # newspaper headlines, clickbait, social engineering. It's true. It has been happening.
I had someone a few weeks ago, last month on the Tech Town Square. Eddie and I had him on the show. He was a former KGB agent, Jack Barsky, who retired from the KGB, moved to the U.S., became a U.S. citizen. And you want to hear something very interesting that I said? How many of you guys think that, what's his name, the FBI oh man, why am I forgetting the founder of the FBI? I'm literally getting a brain fart here. Hang on. J. Edgar Hoover. How many of you guys think J. Edgar Hoover was a cross-dresser?
I've read books on J. Edgar Hoover. Yes, he was. Yes, the founder of the FBI was. Yes, he was.
So he admitted that it was Russian propaganda.
Nah.
Yep.
It might have been. I wasn't alive back then. Sure, why not?
I've got he straight up said that the whole J. Edgar Hoover being a crossdresser was something Russian operatives leaked to eager media to publish to discredit the FBI as an establishment.
Wow. Well, they did a good job. Yeah. Although the FBI did that themselves. Like, they were pretty corrupt back then. So interesting.
Wow.
So do we want to talk about Printergate now?
Let's talk about it.
So James called it this week. James, take it away.
So Monday. So over the weekend, I get a bunch of stuff that says there's going to be a huge Windows Zero Day that's coming up. That's just, you know, that's, you know, just pay attention. It's coming. And I go, I was like, all right, paying attention. And today, I think Sophos released the fact, you know, Sophos was one of the companies, but a bunch of security researchers came out with a zero day on printers that essentially gives a ton of access. And these guys didn't even report it to Microsoft. The researchers like straight up put the POC exploit and submitted it to Black Hat, which is a whole other ethical issue of not reporting the exploit to Microsoft to deal with. Because Microsoft's pretty good about dealing with their zero days. They've shown that with the Exchange zero day vulnerability with SolariWigate. So yeah, that's what we're dealing with today. I hate to say I called it, but I got the intel before it even got published, and I was waiting to see what that intel is, and so saw it last night and saw it again today.
Yeah, I saw TrustedSec posted about it yesterday, where they talked about that and how they validated it and everything like that. So yeah, it's crazy. And when it comes to disabling it, it's not as easy as patching, because the patch that came out, A, doesn't fix it, and B, it's almost a needed service on a domain controller. So it becomes hard to just disable the service if you haven't configured your environment to have print services outside of your domain controllers.
Yep. Welcome to I don't think that's going to be the only one that we're going to see over the next few weeks. I think the lead up to Black Hat, we're going to see a lot of activity on more and more zero days.
How can people breaking into cyber, how does this impact them? Like, how can they get, what can they do?
Chris, you want to take this one?
I mean, first of all, they can keep up on what's happening, right? If they see zero days like this posted, they can read the analysis from different companies, understand what's happening, why it's important, why it's helpful, and look to mitigations. So research the potential mitigations that are out there and be able to talk to a potential hiring manager about them. So for example, Ben posted, it works if you remove legacy groups. Well, that's an additional piece of information that those just following patch management might not see and might not, or that might not be something possible if they have legacy groups heavily ingrained within their organization.
Yeah, this is another example of why these zero days and responsible reporting is really important for a lot of people. Because I can tell you that, you know, as a CISO, and then I think Naomi will second me, we see the stuff, we go to our teams, we start, you know, we'll talk to our MSPs and try to validate where our risk lies and what we need to do to mitigate it. And we spend a lot of time doing it. Now, when you do a responsible reporting and there's a patch and, you know, we get alerted a few days before it goes public, so we're able to maybe get a head start on patching, it puts us in a better position. But this kind of, you know, like security researchers are getting a little, over the top with maybe not always disclosing to that. I mean, I also saw another security researcher who was legitimately frustrated because he tried to report a Google Cloud vulnerability and no one from Google got back to him for 9 months. And it was a legitimate zero-day vulnerability within Google Cloud. And for 9 months, he eventually just went completely public with it. And Google was like, yeah, we don't really care. It's not as big of a zero-day. but answer the security researcher. It's like we on our end are not helping these people who are out there that are trying to win bug bounty dollars, right? So these are freelancers. Like most of these security researchers, they either are part of a zero-day project for a very big cybersecurity vendor, or they're freelancers trying to make a living by doing bug bounty programs. And so they're finding these bugs, and half the time we don't take it serious. And there are documented cases that when we take it serious, we minimize risk and we help the community as a whole. And yet we'll have this very updated thinking, and it's very frustrating as a CISO.
In this case, with the printer spooling, though, I don't think they tried to responsibly disclose to Microsoft. I think they just wrote about it in Black Hat. They're like, here, we're going to submit an RFP and talk about this 0 day that we found and release it to Twitter. And that's exactly what happened. Someone took it, like, oh, thank you for that, you know, and then just exploited it right away. That is not responsible disclosure. I did something similar with LinkedIn, like the whole, 300 million records or whatever was exposed. I'm like, I told you about this earlier in 2021 or 2020 last year. Remember, I talked about this when I was putting together my data for all the polls that I was doing. I used their API, their CSERF token wasn't working the way it was intended, and I was able to scrape data from thousands of people and companies and jobs. And I told LinkedIn about that. They said, oh, it's totally working the way it should be. I'm like, is it really? Because I could go crazy with this, you know, like, and it was frustrating. So it's stuff like that, it's a problem.
Well, I mean, that's the other thing that hit the news this week is that there is another quote unquote collection of 700 plus gigs of LinkedIn data combined with other data of pretty much everyone. And again, they gave that same response, like our API is working as intended, but when is our information like fully out there? Like what could we do to protect it?
Yeah, the data scraping is, I think, is going to be a conundrum for a lot of organizations going forward. And it's a worthy debate, and it's a very difficult debate. Because on one end, data scraping helps, kind of helps part of your business and is a revenue driver. But in another scenario, it's very, very bad when it ends up in the wrong hands. And the question is, how do you do that responsibly? And there are ways to do it responsibly. I just don't know that organizations want to do it responsibly.
So Nathan, I believe, says people who are looking to get started in cybersecurity should follow live streams like this one. Thank you. SANS has a lot of free webinars that also offer continued education credits, and join OWASP chapters on Meetup. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good advice.
Very good. What are your thoughts on scraping data?
Since I already did it. I mean, it's public information. It's like, think about a phone book. That's technically information that, you know, it's personal information. Obviously, it's got names and addresses and phone numbers. But the idea of being able to take gigs and terabytes of data in like split seconds, that is a game changer. So if the API on LinkedIn made it really, really difficult to scrape the information, to me, that's a little bit better than having a CSERF token that didn't work the way it's intended. I can just replay it over and over and over again thousands of times and just continuously scrape data because the API was very helpful with their pagination. So I just kept scraping and scraping data. The API made it very easy for me to scrape the data. That is where the problem is. If it was kind of like, you know, a telephone book where you had to like do one at a time, like that's a lot harder. And you had to replay a new CSERF token every time, then that makes it a lot harder. I don't consider that scraping as much of like hard work in getting the public data from the information that's already out there. So that's how I feel about that. Don't make it too easy to scrape the data.
Yeah. I think that anyone who wants to scrape data from a website should have to register like you would if you're gathering, like if you go to court and you want to pull a court record, they check your ID, they write your name, they know who you are, and they, you know, they have an inventory of who's grabbing your records. So maybe companies should enact the same, like, hey, you want to scrape public data on our website? Fine, you need to register here. What's the purpose of you using it?
Yeah, I shared that article a couple of weeks ago about like functional attacks of an API. If you have an API and you disclose exactly how it works, that's one thing. And you might disable actions outside of that scope. But then if you don't look at like the business use cases and how it could be manipulated within that scope, now people can abuse it. So it like having documentation is one thing, but now you have to think like a threat actor and think within that scope of that API, what can someone do to further manipulate confidentiality, integrity, or availability of your data?
Yeah, that's such a good point. To me, this is a, like for me with this one with LinkedIn, this has been a real challenge for me, right? Because I use LinkedIn a lot. I like LinkedIn. It's my favorite social media network. But at the same time, they're allowing anyone and everyone to scrape data off of them. And now 700 million records are out there. And, you know, I'm not saying that it's private information. It's nothing, like nothing is worse than OPM and Equifax, right? Like, let's start with the baseline. OPM, Equifax, and you can argue Marriott. You can argue Marriott was pretty bad because it had passport information and travel dates and what rooms you took and so forth. And if you want to do real Austin, if you want to blackmail someone, you can start looking at who else was in the hotel at that time and start to put together, you know, scenario stories, conspiracies, you name it. Everything beyond that is just irresponsible handling of people's personal information. And that should be addressed.
Is that victim blaming though, do you think?
No. It's not victim blaming. Look, data scraping is something you allow people to do. You're not a victim when you allow someone to do this, right? So if I go to a gas station and leave the keys in my car because I want someone to steal my car because it's a POS and I want to get the insurance claim, right? Like, you're not a victim at that point. You're a co-conspirator to the crime.
Right. Nathan Greenspan says, did you know that you can pull up anyone's property taxes info for free without any login? It's just the open name, address, account, and how much you owe. Goodness. Wow.
Ugh, that's gross.
To say that our government doesn't know how to handle private information of its citizens is the understatement of the
understatement. Right. Wow. Wow. Right.
I mean, and these are also the people that want government to do everything for you, right?
Give me help. You're right. Here. Oh, we're the government. We're here.
Wow. Wow. I think this is pronounced Age or Age. Please let us know how to pronounce your name. Those trying to break in may also want to look at Attack IQ Academy. Yep. Lots of free training that includes some learning paths that put digital badges on your LinkedIn profile. So that is pretty cool too. Christopher had a question here. How are companies keeping their third-party companies accountable, especially when they have scrapers for their sites?
Great question, and they're not. That's why you're seeing so many scraping. And by the way, that's why data brokers exist. Data brokers scan data. Mm-hmm. It's now, I believe, in 2020, I just got this data a few weeks ago for Goodbye Privacy. But data brokers in 2020, the year of the pandemic, quadrupled their revenue. Almost $700 billion is how much data brokers made in 2020.
That's gross. It's crazy. How much of that was just from scraping publicly available data?
Imagine just they were scraping overtime because people were at home and on the internet all day long. Mm. Netflix allows scraping of your viewer habits. So does Hulu.
Well, Venmo had that public API for a bit. You can like see who your friends were, what you're spending it on, how much money, you know, the emojis you were using. Yeah, that's too much. There are standards for basically like free APIs for LinkedIn in particular, since I've been in their API. I will tell you, they exposed way too much information. They did not need to show all the information. Like, say I'm on your profile page, I can not only see your work history, but like everything about you that you put into your profile that was hidden. Like, I could see that information. Right. And so maybe that was because I'm a premium user. I kind of just figured maybe because I have the premium user or whatever. But I remember looking at people's like when someone posted on a job, like who posted the job, who applied for it, like all these things where I'm just like, that's a little bit too much information that I don't need. And right. So, yeah, LinkedIn didn't do anything with that responsible disclosure. Now they're here.
I know we're almost out of time, right?
Yeah.
Renee, but I do. It is 4th of July weekend. So I kind of wanted to ask both of you, what are you doing for the 4th? What's your favorite memory from the 4th?
Oh, you're cute.
I'm packing.
You're not going to take time off to go see fireworks at the National Mall or something?
I will probably see some. There's some fireworks happening around here in my new neighborhood. It's all
fancy.
Yeah, something going on around here.
Naomi?
No OSINT here, but I will be celebrating my status as an American citizen, the best country in the world.
Woo! Congratulations.
I've always been a citizen. Okay. I love this country. I love this country. Don't forget it. America is a land of freedom. People have fought and bled for our country. James Azar is one of them. Just thank a veteran. Thank somebody who served for a country because we are living in the best country in this world. Do not forget that, people, whoever's listening. Don't let the media trick you into thinking that we're a super racist country, because we do have our problems, but we have overcome a lot too. So consider that.
Yeah. Consider this, that all of our problems are small, that we get outraged over a woman posting a picture
bikinis. Of bikini. Exactly. Think about it that way. Yeah. Don't let the media trick you and gaslight you into thinking this country is something that we're not, because the country loves everybody. We just have to like fix our little issues. We can overcome them. We can. We just have to get away from the tribalism and the woke culture. It's super dangerous.
Well, I think James's point is valid. I mean, James just said that the media, the big media giants, people have had enough. Like,
let me tell you something. I think people are waking up to the fact that if you watch our president, all right, and this is now this, I feel really, really bad. He is in mental decline, severe mental decline. If this was our grandpa, we'd all be looking at how do we get him full-time care, get him a nanny, and get him to put up his feet, relax, and maybe
with a blanket,
and drink a scotch.
Oh, no.
Right? And here's a marathon of Matlock or Night Court. Here you go, Grandpa. Have a great day. All right. And just please take it easy. And we can't ignore that. And I think when the media doesn't talk about it, people lose trust. And I think that's really important. It has nothing to do with, you know, Trump or Biden. It has to do with truth. And I think people are like, I see truth like Naomi sees it, like you see it. We live in the greatest country on earth. We have a saying that's only a saying in America, first world problems.
Right.
We're the only ones. Right. We do. Yeah. We have our problems. I mean, I get it. There's racist people out there. I believe we have racist overcome so much. Everywhere. Yes, there is racism within our institutions. Yes, but once we call it out, we can move forward. Like, let's move forward together. Let's not just keep attacking each other and have these cycles, you know? So
Scott says, trust in the media was lost a long time ago. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like, I don't know. It's something with this last year or two or three where, especially this last year, where it just was so obvious of the lies, or just like you weren't getting news. You were just getting so many opinions and like a lot of bobbleheads, a lot of talking. It's just like, can I get some facts? And let me make up my own decision. I feel like you weren't getting that. You were just getting all of this commentary.
Well, go ahead, Renee. I'm sorry.
No, that commentary just, you know, when I can have my opinion and, you know, people agree, people disagree, but you're operating as a newscaster, even though maybe your title isn't that or whatever on some of the, you know, the cable news networks, and you're operating as this way, as if everything is fact and truth and, you know, and unbiased, and we know it's not. And so I think with that and with the censorship around stuff, I mean, think about like this whole, the whole COVID-19 and coming out now that all the people last year that were like, oh, it came out of a lab, complete censorship, complete,
Weinstein, who's like a known like healthcare, like he's a scientist. YouTube censored him because he talked about the origins of COVID coming from a lab. Like,
yeah. It was so much. The censorship part is, I think, the part that people are really, really like, whoa, like, what is this? Because that's the whole purpose of this place. You're supposed to be able to have freedom of speech. You say your part, somebody else says their part, and you know, it is what it is, and you make up your decision, but it's not that you're just getting all one side, and hence why people are now starting to go to step away from, you know, mainstream media and start to go to other places to get other voices to hear what are people on the ground saying, like what's happening out there that we're not hearing from these quote unquote credible news sources. So yeah.
I just want to say, I want to say one final thing, which is this isn't about red or blue, donkey or elephant, Republican or Democrat, or Jewish, Christian, Muslim, or, you know, white, black, Hispanic, or you name it. This is really just about us being able to have dialogue and us being able to follow our God-given rights on this planet that our forefathers created. And that's what we're celebrating this 4th of July. We're celebrating the Bill of Rights. We're celebrating our independence. We're celebrating the creation of this experiment that's called the United States of America, that's been the longest lasting democracy on planet Earth. We enjoy this weekend with your family and neighbors and friends, and take some time off, and you know, don't drink and drive, please be responsible, and celebrate with, you know, when you go to watch fireworks, I guarantee you one thing. No one's looking at the other person and going, I wonder who they voted for. Everyone's looking in awe at what's going on. And so just remember that, and don't let that be what defines you is all I have to say. And happy 4th of July to everyone watching, listening and whatnot. And happy 4th of July to you, Renee. I know Naomi and Chris have to drop, but happy 4th of July to everyone.
To you too. A couple of good comments here right before we wrap. The media made politics feel like reality TV. I agree.
Yeah, Zoe nailed it.
We're slowly turning into our adversaries, China and Russia. And I don't know who made that comment. David said, well said, Jane. That's Nathan. Yep. And I'm going to barbecue in a bikini.
So. You know what? In this country, you're absolutely entitled to do it. And hell, if you do an Instagram or TikTok video of it, you might get 1 million views. Who knows?
Right. All right, everyone. Enjoy your 4th, and we will see you next Thursday. Thank you so much for viewing. A lot of engagement today.
Yes, we did. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody.